Thank you for joining us on More Than That, a podcast where we dive a little bit deeper into what was preached on Sunday morning. We hope that this is enriching to your walk with Christ and that you love God and people that much more so that we can extend the glory of God to the people he has placed in our lives. So buckle up and enjoy the conversation. Hey, City Church, welcome back to More Than That. So this week we had a very different preacher, not Taylor Swift, but we have Peter Swift, and Peter had the next, and it is the fifth dispute in Malachi, and it had everything to do with giving and what Israel was giving to God. So, Peter, if you had an extra 10 minutes to dive into something different or go deeper into one of the things that you already brought up in the sermon, what would that have been?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to think that I'm a better option than Taylor Swift.
I would agree.
In a variety of ways, though I think, if I heard correctly, Larry mentioned that she's preaching next week, so everybody that's listening to this should come see Taylor here at City Church next Sunday.
Only if Kelsey's coming.
Right. Yes. Her next album. We'll come along with them. But yes, I did preach on Malachi 3, and I think, I kind of started off the service with just trying to put people a little bit at ease that this is not going to be a traditional tithing service. I think a lot of people have this impression that when churches talk about tithing, it's because they need to raise money or they're trying to, instill this discipline in their people. And I think that's actually not a bad reason to preach about tithing, but that's not what we were doing. Because in Malachi, the section of Malachi that we were reading, Malachi 3, there's an accusation against God's people that they're robbing God. God is essentially saying, you are robbing God. And they say, well, how are we robbing you? And the response is, and your tithes and our offerings, the storehouses are empty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked a lot about that. We talked about what the tithe was in Old Testament times. But I think where, if I'd had more time, I probably would have actually made it a little more practical and maybe a little more uncomfortable. would have talked about like, how giving affects the church, how giving affects our pastor, how giving affects, keeps the lights on here and how important that is. And I'm very much in favor of a lot of transparency when it comes to like churches and their budgets and the finances and all that. And that's something that City Church is working on. I'm a member of our finance committee that we have. And if anyone asks to see the church's budget or asks to see where we're at, nothing's going to be hidden. We're happy to share that. And in fact, I'd like to put it in front of our church more often because there are needs. We are, our church and this year, we're headed towards kind of a deficit. Now, I think there's some good news with that deficit as well, that like, while we're going towards a deficit, absent a very large gift from a supporting church that came last year, but not this year. So in some ways, there's improvement, but still, there is like the practical matter of how do your gifts affect City Church?
Yeah.
And I think that's really good because you want to see, how your money is being used. And we want to see that we're being good stewards of what we have here at City Church. We want to make sure that our building is in good shape. We want to make sure that it's warm in the cold weather and cold in the warm weather. And we've had, it's good to be aware of those things and see that, hey, my money matters. And then, Raph mentioned this a little bit, but I think the other neat thing to see is like how our giving here at City Church has broad influences across the world through Acts 29. Mm-hmm. I think that's really exciting for us too. And there's a lot of examples in scripture that are encouraging on this too. This year, just by, I guess, providence, or maybe it's, or maybe Raphael is really good at planning this out and thought through this, but we read through Exodus, we read through Acts, or through a portion of Acts, and we did Philippians, and in each of those sections there were really important discussions of giving. During my sermon I mentioned in Exodus, I think it's Exodus 36, where we find out that Moses actually has to tell the people to stop bringing their gifts. There's too much, there's more than enough, and it's it's becoming too complex to manage all of these gifts. Let's dial it back a little. That's not the situation we're in right now.
I mean, granted, for all intents and purposes, that's a good problem to have.
Oh yeah, that's like the best problem. This is not. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. And I think, you know, there's also some very practical things. Back then, the gifts were not always purely financial.
Mm-hmm.
The gifts were, you know, it's like there is this practical, like, hey, if everybody's bringing their lambs on the first of the month, where do you keep all the sheep while you're waiting to sacrifice? Yeah. Like, there are some, like, you know, if you're bringing, or even bringing various forms of jewelry or various, you know, or foods or whatever that they were giving back then, because it wasn't all strictly financial, it was much more challenging to manage that. So that might also be part of it. Just practically speaking, there was no way to manage some of these gifts. Right. And they were still kind of working on those things. And I don't think it was like, stop giving and don't give in the future. I think it was more of a temporary thing. Like, hey, right now we are set. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. Look at God's abundance. Look at how you are participating in this. This is, the benefit for the community is huge. So I think that's, you know, that's a really neat example. And we read about that in Exodus. And then, in our study on Acts, we see the early church. This was a big part of the early church, is they lived in such a community that they had all things in common. They shared, you know, they'd sell their property and they became the property of the church, and they were working to grow the church. And we see the blessings that come from that for the early church, which is amazing. And I don't think this is necessarily instructive that this is exactly how the church should always live and operate, but it is still, like, you see the blessings for the community that came from giving, and you see, more importantly, I think you see God blessing the givers, and you see that there, you know, no one wants, you know, no one there, you know, they are, the community is blessed because of their sacrifice. And I think it's, you know, there's that's faith affirming, and when you see God blessing that giving, you're going to be encouraged to give more and more. And then, you know, we also see in we read Philippians this year, and Philippians is really great because a number of times, you know, Paul talks about the partnership that Philippians have with his ministry. And I think that's an important thing too, because he says, like, the Philippians were the only ones at one point that were financially supporting his missionary work. But in chapter one of Philippians, he explains how the Philippians, because of their partnership in the gospel, they get the blessings of that too.
Mm-hmm.
They're making these sacrificial givings, but, like, he's saying, like, look, you are a part of what I am doing. Like, you might be back in Philippi and I might be in Macedonia or wherever else I am. But the work that I am doing, I'm being equipped because of your work, and you are a part of that. And I think that's a really encouraging thing to see when we learn about, you know, Acts 29 church plants, things like that. We are City Church, we are blessed as our finances are contributing to that work globally. And that's a really neat thing too. So those were probably some things I would want to spend a little more time on if there was more time. And, you know, and even just pointing out, like, hey, putting our church's budget in front of us and say, look, we're looking at, like, approximately a $30,000 to $40,000 deficit before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then next year, that deficit's even larger based on the projections that we have.
Yeah.
And we want to be good stewards of what we have, but that does put a burden on us too. We have to take giving seriously as a church.
Mm-hmm.
We are very blessed to be a part of this church, but we also want to be a blessing to Raphael. We want to be a blessing to the staff. We want the staff to be paid. We want to be able to do things well. We want the building to, you know, survive.
It's a big building too.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I would like to do. I mean, I don't know. I'm not privy to exactly, like, what the plans are for the future. But boy, it'd be nice to have an elevator. You know, boy, it'd be nice to have.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to access some of the, you know, the upper floors and have better ingress and egress, and you know, think of the opportunities we'd have for hosting events or hosting people, or even, you know, who knows, the sky's the limit on these things. But a lot of it, you know, unfortunately, the reality of it is we're resource constrained when it comes to money, and it's a need. And if we want to move forward in the things that we think God has put in front of us, we have to give.
Yeah, and I think that's just one of the things that I have struggled with in the past. Like, you know, there were times where, like, in my life, I was living paycheck to paycheck, and it was quite literally like, I have $10 this week, or I have $20 every month that I can like spare, because that's the only thing that's not going to like me surviving and living. Because I mean, one of the things I didn't want to do is go back to my parents' house and live. Like, just wasn't
not because of your pride or anything.
No, not at all. But it was very much a like, this is what I got. So here's take it. Please do something with it for the church. But one of the things that you mentioned was that it wasn't always financial. Is there any translation into our current culture of, hey, like, you know, I know you work for Camp Susqua, and you've gotten donations, and like we could maybe call it a tithe for all intents and purposes, that are not strictly financial. Would that still be considered a part of our tithing to the church if it's not directly from our bank account? Maybe it's like with Ratio Christi, the organization that I work with, like, there's opportunities now to give like a car. Like, if you have an extra car that you're not using, but a missionary that you're supporting needs one, and you want to give that car to them, like, you can.
Yeah.
So how does that look like? Is there any translation?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I, you know, in the Old Testament, we had, you know, a lot of very strict rules about how the giving was to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the foundational tithe, which is a tenth, it's a tenth of your fruit, a tenth of your grain, a tenth of this or that. But it also gave provisions like, hey, if you can't provide this because maybe you're not a farmer, you know, if you can't do this,
yeah,
well, here's the provision. Here's how you do this. And there's a premium, actually. It was like, you'll just have to pay some extra to, you know, to kind of make those substitutions. But there was, you know, and like even in Malachi, it talks about like the cumin and the dill and all of the different things.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these very specific rules. You know, we see the fulfillment of the sacrificial system. We see a fulfillment of the tithe in God's, you know, in the death of Christ on the cross. And that those same duties and regulations those are now fulfilled. And for us, the tithe has been transformed by Christ from being an obligation by faith to fulfill these things to now this is an outpouring of thanksgiving and love for what God has done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. Like, I don't think even using the word tithe probably isn't necessarily. I think there's some practical things I'll get into in a bit about tithing. Mm-hmm. But like, that's why a lot of churches don't even call it tithes. They'll call it offerings, or they'll call it giving. You know, we'll use mm-hmm. other words, because the tithe isn't necessarily the right word for it anymore, because we are now giving because God gave to us. And I think, but what that does for us is it's no longer a portion; it's our all. There's no, you know, we are now obligated to give everything to God, and you know, that starts with our heart. And if we give Him our heart, how can we hold anything else back from Him?
Mm-hmm.
And that's so what that looks like for the individual giver. I mean, I think it comes down to a lot of things. Like, what does the church need? You know,
mm-hmm.
like I run into this at our camp a lot. You know, sometimes people are offering us something that the person may see a perceived value in it, but it might be something we don't need as a camp. And that's very nice. It's very generous to give it to us. But is it really, you know, is this really a gift? Is this really a sacrifice? Is this really, or is this an opportunity? You were cleaning out your closet and you gave us some, which I don't want to like say those things are bad, but I don't know if that's strictly like, you know, I don't think that's giving. I think that's, you know, efficient use of, I don't know, your junk. And a lot of churches struggle with this. You know, there's a joke, it's called Jesus junk, you know, like, and this could be because there's a generation that, you know, lived through the Depression or had parents that lived through the Depression, and we want to get every little speck mm-hmm. of use out of things that we can. But it's not unusual for, you know, someone to roll up to Susqua and, you know, and say, hey, here's all of my old tools. You know, here's a wheelbarrow of all these old tools. It's
yeah.
And you want to honor that gift. You want to say thank you and honor it, because this person really thinks they're doing this wonderful thing to it, but really we're probably just going to throw it away, because like it's not useful to us.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's not even particularly charitable for that person, because they're, you know, oftentimes they're, I think when you give these things to a Christian organization, it almost reminds you of the first chapter of Malachi when you're bringing these blemished lambs and when you're bringing these broken, these broken sacrifices. Because are you giving your first fruits? No, you're giving your leftovers and you're, and I think there's this, you know, a lot of things to unpack with that concept. But that being said, absolutely, there are things that the church can use that are non-financial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's in fundraising circles, there's a lot of, I love fun acronyms. And one is like, you know, the three T's, your time, talent, and treasure. Those are the things that we're demanding. But there's one that I like a lot better. It's called, it's LIFE. Okay. Labor, influence, finances, and expertise.
Yes, I like that much better.
And I think, like, I mean, the church can use all of those things. And I don't think, you know, I think where you might get into a danger zone personally is if, like, oh, this is great, I don't have to give my finances if I give my labor instead, or something like that. When you start making those that bargaining in your head, you know, I think that's a warning sign that you've got an idolatry issue, because you should be holding nothing back. We should be giving our entire life to our church. And to God. And that is, you know, we should be laboring. We should be working on behalf of the church. We should be using our influence. That means like inviting your neighbors, inviting your friends, inviting other people to church.
Mm-hmm.
Our finances, absolutely. I think your finances have to be engaged in giving. And this doesn't, I mean, Tyler, even if you only owe $10 to your name this week, remember, that $10 belongs to the Lord, and it should be used in accordance with that. And I think, like, you know, Paul even in Corinthians talks about the Macedonians who were subject to abject poverty, and yet they were giving and blessing Paul's missionary journey. And I think that's, you know, he commends them for that faithfulness. And we also had the example, I referenced this, the widow's mite, you know, that she was giving. Now, I mentioned this during the sermon too. I think actually that passage may be a little less about the faithful giving of the widow and more about the failures of the Pharisees to care for the widows. But that's, you know, that was covered in the sermons. So we don't need to talk too much about that right now. But I think ultimately, to answer your question, is there are all of these other ways to give to the church, and you need to be thinking of those ways to give to the church. And there may be items and things that the church needs, but I would say make sure we're being reasonable at that and talking to the elders to make sure these are things that are useful to the church.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at Susqua, I often, like, you know, gifts of property, you know, absolutely. We would be happy to take that. Or like stocks, you know, things like, you know, or, you know, vehicles, things like that. Absolutely. But typically often, like, if we don't have a use for it, we're going to try to find a way to liquidate it and turn it into capital, because that's the thing we can use the most.
Yeah.
Now, we might have better resources to do that than you do. So by all means, you know, let's have that discussion. But I would say if you're trying to offload your stuff to the church, make sure it's useful for the church and not creating a burden for the church. Because I think there is this... There's this idea of Jesus junk, and I've heard stories from missionaries about like receiving like half spent tea bags and stuff like that.
Oh, no.
I think there's this, you know, we're people that have lived through the Depression are trying to get every little bit of value out of things, and they see this as being useful. But I think on the other hand, we really do want to look at Malachi and remember that we are to give our first fruits, and like the question that Malachi asked, like, would you, or God asked this through Malachi, would you serve this, the governor?
That's such,
no,
that's
well,
such
then,
a hard-hitting question.
Then why would you give it to God? Like, that is,
yeah.
So I think those are good, like, kind of questions to check yourself on and ask. But I think, you know, it's probably good for the church, you know, for off listens to this, probably not a bad idea for us to put up a wish list on the website or thing like that. What are some practical things that we need? We do that at Susqua, and because there's certain things that like we just go through all the time, like AA batteries or like Sharpies. And every now and then, like, we'll get a box of AA batteries and a case of Sharpies, and it's wonderful because we like eat those.
Yeah.
Or we like right now we have a skid steer up there. Like, we're probably not going to buy a skid steer because that's like a $50,000 thing. But like, there might be some farmer out there who's like, you know, kind of either thinking of upgrading or thinking of retiring, and they don't need it. And hey, we can find a use for this.
Like, somebody's not buying the farm from them, but they're just going to use the land for like hunting property and stuff like that. It's like beautiful use of a resource to gift.
Yeah. Something... Letting people know your needs. How else are you going to? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important thing.
And that, I think, you know, the half spent tea bag or the box or the wheelbarrow of used tools. It's like, I think you hit on something unintentionally there because it's not sacrificial. Because it's not sacrificial, is it really a gift? But that doesn't necessarily mean that we are, or like currently, like in our conversation, advocating for the prosperity gospel or the poverty gospel.
Right.
Like, I think that there's a really big difference there, that there's this happy middle that, yes, we are giving sacrificially, but we're not giving so sacrificially that we are putting ourselves in such a bind that we're not able to do that again. But it's more of like a, like an investment, an investment type of thing, where usually, because my dad's kind of in this process right now, the investors, like the investors that they're seeking, they're, those type of investments are, they're going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's going to be sacrificial for that company, because they're going out on a limb to say, yes, I'm going to back this product here. So I think that that's kind of what we should be doing as the church. It's like, hey, I'm going to back this church, and I'm going to invest in this church so much so that I'm going to give sacrificially, because not only am I benefiting from this, but other people are also going to benefit from it. And like you brought up with the Acts 29 network and how we're able to gift and give on up and above what a lot of churches do, because for one, that's kind of a part of Acts 29, is supporting those churches, but also because we have this theology that is based in like Philippi and Paul, in that relationship there where they're sending it across borders. Do you have any thoughts about like that sacrificial style of giving, where it's like we're not dipping into the poverty gospel, but we're also not like advocating for the opposite of that?
Well, and I also want to make it clear, like, there's nothing wrong with non-sacrificial giving. I just don't want to be equated with sacrificial giving, because they're not the same. They are different. They're useful. And like one is like that guy bringing up the load of the wheelbarrow full of tools. If they have the attitude like, hey, I'm getting rid of these, do you have a use for them? If so, great. If not, chuck them. But you know, just wanted to check with you. You know, like if it's not the idea that, hey, I'm blessing, I'm doing this good work, blessing the church through, or the blessing the kingdom through this, and you're just, this is a transactional thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I just don't want that to be equated with giving. Likewise, you know, there might be some uber wealthy dude that's like, hey, let me drop a six-figure check on this church or whatever, that he doesn't even feel the pinch of it. That's great. It's a wonderful blessing for the church, and he's done a really good thing. Is it a sacrifice for him? No. You know, not, you know, so is that part of like giving our first fruits and the things that we care about and these things to God? Probably not. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just, you know, it's a different thing. But I do think, I think sacrificial, like I've heard that, like, you know, if you don't notice that you're giving, then you're probably not giving enough. And I don't think that's a bad rule of thumb. Like if you don't feel it. But on the other hand, like I think, you know, the Bible is very clear that says God, you know, God loves a cheerful giver. I coined the term, well, I don't know if I coined it, but I use the word curmudgeonly in the sermon, that we don't want to give curmudgeonly. But at the same time, like the only way to become a cheerful giver is by practicing giving. And, you know, hopefully like the more you give, the easier and more freeing it is to give. And that's been my experience too, in that, like, from my family, I went through a tough situation, about, you know, when I switched careers, something was really holding me back from wanting to switch careers, and that was the love of money. I had made it's only one of the most common topics of the Bible, but even growing up in the church, I had fallen prey to this, and I had fallen in love with money, or the security that it brings me. And the idea of trusting in God and moving into a career for in nonprofit leadership that did not provide anywhere near my previous career had was really scary. But in so doing, it was freeing. You're just airing my dirty laundry on here. Like, my wife and I used to argue about money kind of a lot. And I had a job where I was very well compensated, and we had a beautiful house, and we had we had things. We had the things that we wanted, and we could, do these things that we wanted. Mm-hmm. But it also, it never felt like we had enough. Like, we always felt like we were short or we weren't, became kind of a source of tension and conflict in our life and marriage. I mean, I'm not sorry to say that we were always arguing about, but like, if there was a topic that came up that caused tension, it was money. Just like, mm-hmm. Every marriage counselor will tell you that's like number one. We moved in a direction that kind of like intentionally moved away from having money, and suddenly that wasn't a tension anymore. It was amazing. Like, I mean, we tended to be more generous with our time, with our money, with everything when we had less of it, and we fought about it almost never. And it was something that it was a huge blessing God gave us. And I think that is when we loosen our grip on it, God blesses that, and it becomes easier to give sacrificially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think maybe not a good word for it, but like, I quit a lot of things, especially in the Christian life, going to the gym. Mm. Like, you go to the gym, like, at first, you're a curmudgeon in the gym. Like, you do not want to be there. Like, I'm like this with leg day. I hate leg day. Mm. I'm like kicking and screaming going into that day of my workout.
Well, kicking is already part of leg day, so that's great.
I'm halfway there. But once you get going and you start to see the benefits of it, mm. of going to the gym, you're not only are you more energized during the day, you want to go back to the gym, and you're starting to see, like, not just how you're feeling about your body and how mm-hmm. all things are going, but you're starting to see physical benefits of it. You're losing weight, or you're hitting a goal of having a little bit more of like a chiseled jawline, or mm-hmm. Whatever it might be.
Or you just see the plate stacking up.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're
like, 6 months ago, I could only lift this. Now I'm lifting this. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And plays, I'd never really lifted for weight, but yeah, that's a really good one mm-hmm. as well. But as you go, you want to go back to the gym. And when you stop, you miss it. Mm. You miss the gym. You miss not just the benefits and like the physical, like the physique benefits, but you miss actually the activity of it. And I mean, granted, I'm in that position right now because I'm like trying to figure out what it's like to be a dad and go to the gym and all mm-hmm. that stuff without having to wake up at like 5 a.m. because that's not me at all. But I have a feeling it's the exact same way in the Christian life with giving. Once you start, you're going to feel it. You're going to be sore. Your wallet might be
a little unpleasant. You're not getting to do the things you wanted to do.
Yeah.
You're killing an idol. I mean, we don't like when our idols get killed. And it hurts, but the benefits, it might take a while to start seeing them, but then mm-hmm. you look back and you're like, wow, look where I was, look where I've come to.
Yeah.
And it definitely becomes easier and easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big thing, even with that, like, giving is a discipline, and it requires practice, requires effort. And, I mentioned that I'd come back to this a little while ago. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think tithing is, like, I don't think you have to assign a percentage to it. But I do think it's a good idea to assign mm-hmm. a percentage to it. Because I think, I talked in the sermon a little bit about the blessings of the tithe for the mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. that the tithe is not a burden. It was a blessing. This mm-hmm. is actually helped them direct their lives, helped them direct their communities toward a life of worship around the temple.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the tithe literally was, like, instructive, because it affected every part of their life to do that. Giving still does that. This is the way. Like, if you are intentional about it, it requires you to budget.
Mm-hmm.
It requires you to think about how your work affects your worship. It requires mm-hmm. you to make these connections from your vocation to Sunday morning, and it requires you to, like, connect your family to Sunday morning. It requires you to connect all of your vacation, your rest, suddenly everything is connected to your worship. So I think it is good to not be casual about it, but to be very intentional and to pick a number, because mm-hmm. I think that number is going to help you. It's also going to help your personal finances. Mm-hmm. You're forced to order these things and not live you know, not live just based on checking your bank account to see if I have enough money to go out tonight or whatever. You know, you're yeah, actually like yeah. being intentional about these things and planning. And I think those are mm-hmm. good things that God wants us to do. So I think, you know, giving as a discipline is something to really consider. And I think it's, you know, while I don't feel that the tithe is like the requirement today, you know, if I really wanted to get like super, if I was advising someone personally, like mm-hmm. about it, I'd be like, yeah, I think we should look at the tithe and consider that. I probably wouldn't recommend start, like if you're budgeting, I probably wouldn't recommend going less than that. But I also, you know, there's some people that like, you know, 10% is not going to impact their lifestyle at all. They need to give more, you know, they need to, you know, this is,
yeah.
And there's other people that like 10%, like, well, how am I going to make rent this month? You know, mm-hmm. and, but at the other, you know, the other side of it is like, well, you know, test God in this, you know, the Malachi said, like, test God in this and see if he won't open the storehouses of his blessing. Cause remember, it's all yeah. God's, all of our money came from God.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, cause we talked about that a little bit last night in home group, like just kind of in general testing God, like there's a positive and there's a negative test. Like, usually when we think testing God, we always like assume the negative, kind of mm-hmm. like with consequences, we always assume that they're negative consequences rather than positive consequences. And I think this passage in Malachi really did both.
Yeah.
It hit like, hey, you're testing God. You're testing in a negative sense
by not giving. You're robbing me right now yeah. and look what's happening to you. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. There's a curse on your, yeah, you're. There's this locust that's like eating your crops. There's all these horrible things that are happening, yeah. which I told you would happen.
Like, yeah. listen, I'm being faithful here. Yeah. Like, but then at the same time, this passage does a positive test. And it's like, I'm asking you to test me here so that I can prove my faithfulness.
Yeah.
And I think that giving is a really good litmus test for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the personal benefits of having a good tight budget and being able yeah. to kind of know where you stand and see what you can give, what you yeah. maybe shouldn't be giving, but also understanding where your idols lie so that you can kill them.
Right.
Now
the tricky thing with this though, Tyler, and I think this is an important mm-hmm. distinction to make, is that, well, I mean, first of all, God tells them to test him, and he's essentially saying, he's not actually telling them to do anything new. He's actually saying, no, yeah. follow my law and you'll get the benefits of the promises. That, like, this is, I'm a covenant keeper. I'm a promise keeper. Do this and I will bless mm-hmm. you. But I think we often will, you know, if we're testing God in this, we also, we even test him negatively when we're doing this in a positive way. I'm saying this all wrong. But we are looking at the blessings through our filter of what we want the blessings to be,
yeah.
not what God is promising us.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
think that's the danger, is that we might think that we read this, and this is where the kind of the prosperity gospel mm-hmm. issue is like,
mm-hmm.
if I do this, then God's going to make me wealthy. Or yeah. if I do this, then I'm going to get the desires of my heart. Mm-hmm. No, if you do this, you are realigning your heart to have the desires of God. And that is what the discipline of giving does for us, is it takes away our sinful idolatry and our sinful desires and aligns our desires to God's desires.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that,
yeah.
we are blessed, like so blessed. And it, you know, I always come back to, I think I referenced this, like my home group's probably annoyed by this. you know, John Piper has this silly concept of Christian hedonism. Cause he's just like intentionally provocative with the phrase Christian hedonism, mm-hmm. which I love. Cause hedonism is the idea that we're seeking pleasure.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, hedonism, yep. you know, hedonism is a bad thing for Christians. Yeah. You know, that this is like the picture of hedonism is like the, you know, the Roman emperor being fed grapes by beautiful women and mm-hmm. just, you know, living a life of luxury. That's hedonism. But John Piper says, he redefines hedonism. He says that hedonism, Christian hedonism, is when if we train ourselves to want what God wants for us, then our pleasures are God's pleasures, and we should seek them, and we should seek pleasure because we're seeking God's pleasure. And I think that's what this does. You know, giving and sacrificial giving realigns our priorities to be with God's priorities. So those blessings are defined by God, not by us.
Mm-hmm.
And we will receive those blessings, but they're not going to be what we think they are. we're not going to think that, like, well, if I give, I'm going to win the lottery, or if I give, I'm going to have that big, that car that I want. No, what we find out when we give and when we're faithful in this and when we do this honestly and earnestly, consistently, in a sacrificial and worshipful way, we find out that we don't want that car as much.
Mm-hmm.
Or we don't, suddenly those things become less meaningful to us.
Yeah.
And the work of the Lord through the church becomes what's meaningful to us, and we are blessed through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to realize there is, like, you know, God promises blessing in this, but we want to make sure we're defining that blessing the way God defines it, not just through our desires.
Yeah, because when it becomes about our desires, it's transactional.
Right.
And we want it to
do this, get this.
Yeah. It, rather than what we see in all of, I mean, would it be fair to say that that giving is a sanctifying thing to do?
Yeah, it's a spiritual discipline, mm-hmm. and okay. I think there's blessing through that. It's, I mean, I come from, like, you know, a very Presbyterian background. We talk about the regular means of grace or the ordinary means of grace, and you know, giving is not an ordinary means of grace, but it's a manner by which we pursue the ordinary means of grace.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think it's connected to it. And I think absolutely giving is sanctifying, just like any spiritual discipline is sanctifying.
Yeah, and if that's the case, if giving is sanctifying, then the whole point of sanctification is to transform us into the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
So then giving isn't transactional, then it's transformational.
Absolutely.
In trajection towards the image of God, which is Jesus.
Yeah. I think that. Not transactional, it's transformational. That should have been my quote for my picture on social media. I'm going to steal that.
We'll just redo it. Yeah. But I think that just in general, transactional, or it's to be transformational, not transactional. It's just, there's so much within the Christian life that works that way.
Yeah.
Especially with our relationship with God. It's not supposed to be, hey, I'm going to follow you so I can do this. It's right. I'm going to follow you because you're worth following.
Yeah. Because you love me and I love you.
Like, it's, yeah.
It's even like, you know, the Christian life, one of the things we pray to is we follow God out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of out of love.
Yeah.
God wants us to follow him out of love.
Mm-hmm.
We are not, who's the Machiavelli? Was it Machiavelli that, or Sun Tzu? No, Machiavelli says, like, it's better to be feared or to be loved. And he's like, well, it's better to be, if you can't be both, be feared. But that's not what God wants. He wants mm-hmm. us to follow him because we love him and because he loves us. And that's, you know, and that's not transactional. That's, we are obeying not to avoid punishment, but we are obeying because we love God so much that we know this pleases him and we want to please him.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's kind of pointing us back to, and which Jesus does all the time, pointing us back to our original state in the garden, where it's like, hey, this is what it was like. Adam and Eve were perfect examples of this, of being in a transformational type of relationship, this loving God because he loves us.
And they completely depended on him.
Yes.
And that dependence, I think what we do, and this with all of our idols, is we're taking away the dependence of God and replacing it with the things that we think we can control. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And
money is probably the best example of that.
Yeah, because it affects, in our current world, it affects everything. Yeah. So I want to leave that there, because that's a heavy-hitting thing to think about, is how is money transforming you rather than, you know, letting God transform your view of money. And just giving in general, of your, you know, like you, with a LIFE acronym, labor, influence, finance, and expertise. Yeah. How is your love of God influencing
and transforming
the LIFE acronym and those things? So,
and how are you living that life for God?
Yes.
Like, how are all of those things serving the Lord?
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's why I love these. That's why I love these acronyms. It's so great.
Which, again, I've never heard that one before. So
I didn't come up with it. So it's, you know, I wish I was that clever. I like collecting all these acronyms, but I don't ever create them.
That's all right. I'm still going to steal it.
Yeah. But, you know, kind of, since we're kind of putting a resting on that thought, mm-hmm. I do want to bring up, this is just as a nonprofit leader, and bring up the Jesus junk is all, you know, is all very triggering for me. So I gotta, but I do, I think an important thing to remember for our churches and for our ministries, for our nonprofits, for Ratio Christi, mm-hmm. for, you know, any of these things, is we have, our culture needs to get out of this perspective that we should make do with less, that mm-hmm. nonprofits should, are lesser somehow and should yeah. be expected to live with less. Yeah. This is a frustration for me. Now, it sounds very, you know, since I'm a nonprofit leader saying these things, mm-hmm. This time of year, because it's, you know, we're mid-November,
mm-hmm.
this is the time of year where, like, end of year giving request letters come out.
Yep.
But
yep.
it's also when on social media, I will start seeing memes shared that display, like, the salaries of, like, Red Cross's CEO or mm-hmm. United Way CEO or all these things,
yeah.
all these
yeah.
big, and people are disgusted that these CEOs are making this much money. And I push back hard against that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, like, I don't think there's, like, a proper level of money or whatever, but we can't say on one side that nonprofits are doing the important work in our community and that that they're meaningful and that our church is doing important work and is really meaningful and matters and all these things. We can't say that and then say, but they should only get our leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have outdated computers with old software.
Yeah.
And they should have, you know, they should get 20 bids instead of 3 for whatever product they're doing. And they should rely exclusively on volunteer labor for painting or for whatever, mm-hmm. or for these things. They should squeeze every penny until the very last, you know, bit mm-hmm. of copper comes out of it. We can't have it both ways. We can't say that nonprofits and charities and these especially ministries are so important and then tell them to get by with, like, a, you know, 35-year-old junker car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that, like, you know, our pastors should be driving Beamers and mm-hmm. really nice. I'm not saying that, but, like, yeah. at the same time, like, why not? Why shouldn't they have nice things? If it's appropriate for the cult, yeah, there's a lot to discuss with that.
Yeah.
We could go on to the preachers and sneakers, discussion too, because that's a fun one. But, but I do think that we have this attitude and this perception out there that charities, churches, et cetera, are supposed to get by on nothing but secondhand and outdated stuff,
mm-hmm.
and yet we're also saying that they're the most important thing to us, and they're the most important. They're the integral part of that's holding our community together, and we can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to, you know, change our attitude towards giving and our expectations for how we compensate our pastors, for example.
Yeah,
they should
yeah.
be well paid. And likewise, our CEO, like, if you want Red Cross, a multi-billion-dollar organization, to run effectively, you need a Fortune 500 CEO. You know, you need someone of high
yeah.
quality. And
yeah.
and honestly, you're not going to get that if you're paying, you know, pennies on the dollar or whatever for. Mm-hmm. But I don't yeah. like the idea that we expect professional work and professional output out of our nonprofits, but we don't provide professional pay or professional resources.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just it's one of those hobby horses I have, or one of those, like, things. This kind of, like, brings it all up for me a little bit. And of course, it sounds very self-serving because I am the executive director of a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
And I see this, and, you know, in full disclosure, I'd like to drive a nice car someday, maybe, but...
Yeah, hey, we all have our dream cars.
Yeah, I mean, not that, like, I don't want that to become an idol for me or a big deal, but
yeah.
at the same time, I don't think we should expect our pastors to live in poverty. Our pastors should be paid in such a way that they don't have to worry about their money.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't need to be the big focus. I mean, this is just for City Church in particular. I don't want Raf to go back to be bivocational. I don't want Raf to have to, like, you know, travel to other, you know, all over to pick up speaking fees elsewhere, mm-hmm. or to, you know, serve. Yeah, I'd love him to be able to serve in those ways, but I don't want to be financial. I want to pay him well so that he can, you know,
focus on
serving
yeah.
the church and be a pastor for us.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's on us to make sure that. And likewise, I want our staff. I want to be able to pay our Tylers for the work that they're doing. I want to pay our worship leaders for the excellent work they do. And I think that's on us to, mm-hmm. I didn't want to bring this up in the sermon necessarily, but I do think we need to take giving seriously. City Church, we need to give generously to our church and prioritize that and show that this part of our life is important to our pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, and I, yeah, as somebody who, you know, does have a half, like, my wife doesn't do, like, the ministry that I do, like, mm-hmm. she's got her own job and everything, And quite honestly, I think she wants to keep it that way because she's like, I look at what you do and I don't want to do it. I also say the same for her.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just bought a house last year, and granted, a lot of that was prompted because of Taylor being pregnant, and we just quite literally could not live in that apartment because it was like super dangerous for a kid.
Right.
No storage. Everything was on the floor. It's like, kid starts crawling. Like bad things are gonna happen, but
well, not to mention, I mean, the weight of all of your books was probably threatening the floor and everything too. So, you need a better place to store your books. That's
crucial. Which the cool part is, we have more space now, so that means I can buy more books.
Get more books, yeah, yeah.
That are not on the
Kindle. As long as we're talking about idols, let's start talking about your book collection.
Well, if we're gonna talk about my book collection, we got some other.
Yeah,
we might be in the wrong church for that.
Yeah, yeah.
As we're sitting in kind of the same floor as our bookstore,
right?
But yeah, it's like whenever, because that thought has crossed my mind as well. Like, you say you want to support, and you think that what I'm doing on the college campus is worth doing, and it's something that is much needed in our culture. Because at Ratio Christi, one of the things that we have is, so as goes the university, so goes the culture. So if that's such a high priority for you, then why does your life not reflect that? And maybe not just like you actually going. I mean, we would love that. We would love more like apologists to go out into the universities, or to even like, if you're not an apologist, go like Crew and CCO and a whole bunch of other ministries that are doing great work on the college campuses. It's like, if you feel a call into that, that's great. But also there might be missionaries in your local community that are doing work that you can still support. Same thing with Camp Susqua. Camp has a special place in my heart. I worked at Chrisland for a couple years, and without Camp, I wouldn't be here. So it's like, you know, being able to sit down and talk with you, and you know, those type of things. It's like, go support different nonprofits that you actually want to support and side with, especially your church, because that's going to be a foundational aspect of not just your life, but the community's life. And I think that that's kind of been proven in different sociological studies where there are no churches. The community's in shambles.
There's a great book called Alienated America that came out a few years ago. And it's those missing third places in the community, like churches, like, and those are the sociological effects of that are tremendous. The addictions, crime, all of these things. So we see that impact for sure. So, I mean, I think you do have, you know, churches and ministries serve a very important role in our community. It's quantifiable. You can literally look at the statistics and see that this, you know, even if someone does not agree philosophically or theologically with their presence, they can't deny the effectiveness and how much they matter to the community.
Yeah.
And then if at the same time that we're recognizing and acknowledging how important that is, then we're also questioning the pastor because they, you know, went out to DeSalvo's or something. Like, that's where there's
for their anniversary.
Sure, for whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a funny thing. Like, I was looking at a vehicle a couple years ago. I'm not even a car person. I don't know why I keep talking about cars. But
it's all right.
A couple years ago, we were looking at a vehicle. We ended up buying a new Honda Pilot. Those are not inexpensive. But it's also, it's like, you know, it's a Honda Pilot. No, it's not flashy. Like, no one's
but
like,
it's also Honda. Like,
no one's looking at Peter and be like, oh, look at that guy. He's doing well. He's got a Honda Pilot. But while we were doing the car search, we did contemplate getting a Tesla. We looked at, you know, we looked at the Tesla, we looked at the price, and, you know, contrary to popular belief, they're not like luxury car prices. They're actually pretty reasonably priced.
Which was Musk's intention.
Right. Yeah.
The
and
cool
like,
part.
A couple of years ago, when we were looking at it, like a fully loaded third row Tesla SUV with all of the features was around $60,000. That's a, now don't get me wrong, that is a lot of money.
That's
more than
I
make in a year. Like, that's no small amount of money. So I'm not trying to say this is cheap, but like, that's actually like not that much more expensive than like a medium trim Honda Pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. And, you know, we were looking through the economics of owning a Tesla. Like, this actually, you know, after 2 or 3 years of ownership, this might actually pay off. You know, there, you know, there's questions one way or the other.
Yeah, my brother has a Tesla, you're so right. Like, you're speaking familiar terms.
So we like we thought about it, but then like, you know, it really came down to a perception issue. We can't have a nonprofit director driving around in a Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad look. And I think that's like showing that our culture has this like value system where we expect our ministry leaders and our you know, nonprofit leaders to, you know, live miserly lives. And I don't think that's, you know, but at the same time, we expect the output to be really high mm-hmm. quality professional.
Yeah.
The other thing, there's also a 12-week late wait on it. So we're like, well, we need a car now. We can't wait 12 weeks anymore.
Yeah. I feel like that's just Tesla. Like, because my brother had the same type of thing when he went to go buy his and he had to wait. It's like, I wouldn't have been able to wait. Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to go down the road to the Ford dealership and get the equivalent of...
Well, our car was literally dead. So it was like, we needed a car week. But we decided not to. I mean, there was a number. Also, like $60,000 was just, even though I don't think that was an unreasonable amount of money, mm-hmm. it wasn't for us. But ultimately, our pastor has to, you know, consider these things because there are these, you know, preachers and sneakers puts pastors on blast for wearing mm-hmm. nice shoes. And now I think there is like, they're pointing out an incongruity that needs to be pointed out, needs to be considered. And to be fair to preachers and sneakers too, they're only using like self-published social media pictures. There's no gotcha journalism going mm-hmm. on here. This is taking right off. But I think there is, it's a conversation I think needs to be more in the forefront of people's minds. Like the expectation that, that nonprofits, charities, ministries, churches, should just, you know, use that used tea bag instead of getting fresh or do all the work they're doing, but do it on like the tightest budget possible is, it's absurd.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. We would expect McDonald's to have the most recent computers, the most recent everything.
Mm-hmm.
But are they contributing to our community the way the Red Cross is? I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say
in fact, opposite, probably.
Yeah, the opposite.
But yet there's, you know, we don't blink at all with like, you know, McDonald's paying well or installing new equipment or, you know, we mm-hmm. that's, of course, we expect that. But then, you know, you have these organizations that are doing like incredible work for the community that mm-hmm. They're expected to, you know.
Especially with advanced degrees. I think because I mean, I kind of live in academia, mm-hmm. Being in college ministry, but like you see pastors going back for a PhD or a DMin or mm-hmm. something, or which is a doctor of ministry.
Right.
But you see them going back for advanced degrees, and I've heard people say, like, why? What's the purpose? Why? Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he just like read his Bible more? It's like,
right. Yeah.
Well, there are many reasons, especially like given, like just to kind of pull Raphael's dissertation out, mm-hmm. like coming out of COVID, like resiliency was at an all-time low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like without a PhD and extensive research into somebody like Athanasius, who's kind of a long forgotten, like giant in the church.
I've learned more about Athanasius from Raphael than I ever would have learned mm-hmm. on my own. I probably wouldn't have even known who Athanasius is if it wasn't for Raphael. And now I love,
exactly.
I know the Athanasian Creed. I know all these. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah.
But like, without taking the time to do the research, the benefit for the church community as a whole, the global church, with Raphael's dissertation, would not exist.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not just a benefit for us here at City Church. That's a benefit for like Eddie's church in Colombia or Sikle's church in
South Africa.
It's like that's reaching
quite
literally the corners of the world. And it's like that's what advanced degrees can do. And we could go on about like all the different things. I think that just the point there of don't expect your pastor to live, or any ministry, full-time ministry person to live paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And pinching pennies because that's just what pastors do. It's like,
right.
Paul didn't do that. Jesus didn't do that. And I think that, if anything, we should be looking at those two examples, not our current culture's examples.
Right.
So, Peter, I know you got some stuff to get to, so I want to be fair to your time. I really enjoyed the conversation and learned a new acronym. And I hope you guys learned and were convicted even further than what happened on Sunday to really take giving seriously. Yeah. And to not let it be transactional, but to let it be transformational so that we can be the best image bearers of Christ that we can in our community. So if you are not a current member of City Church, or you just don't go anywhere, we would love to meet you. We'd love to know how you got connected to City Church, whether it was through like a Google search, you found this podcast on Stitcher or something like that, and you're like, hey, I'm going to go check it out. And that's especially if you're in Williamsport area. If you're not, we encourage you to get involved in a local church and start giving to that church so that that church can then help your community. So, Peter, I saw you open your Bible.
Yeah, I want to get the last word. I want to get the last word.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm just going to read a couple of verses from Malachi 3. Verse 8, will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In your tithes and your contributions. And I just wanted to say that God held nothing back from us on the cross. He gave himself. He gave his son. There was nothing held back. So, even though this example is talking about some specific circumstances and tithes, if we hold anything back from God about ourselves, we are robbing God, because he owns us all. Yeah. He owns every part of us. So don't hold back from God.